Hello, and welcome to recording number 24 of Barry Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. I had just previously been reading about Ord in Stoink and his encounter with Evelyn. I'm going to restart here on page number 169, paragraph 7. "Sold, they would sell you," said Gord, when her downcast eyes told him that her tale was told. "As surely as my father fails to pay my ransom. No one can sell you, Evelyn. You're a baroness, and the most beautiful girl in the world." "Don't raise your voice so," she cautioned softly, "and thank you, Gord." "Don't thank me yet, dear lady. Wait until Stoink is behind us, and then you may say thus." Evelyn looked up at him for a moment, moonlight making her eyes gleam marvelously. Gord was unused to looking down upon a woman, for his height was such that most girls were nearer to par with him. But this gorgeous creature stood only an inch over 5 feet, and Gord felt like a hero. Already, as she silently beseeched him to make good his intimation of rescue, "He must return to the palace now, or they will become suspicious," Evelyn said, moving away from him toward the pathway leading to the hall. She still held his hand lightly, and Gord moved to retain the contact. "When shall I see you again?" he asked. "Never, unless you make the opportunity," she whispered. "You think that pig in there allows anyone as young and handsome as you to be near me?" Handsome, she had called him that. Gord felt as though he were floating above the ground, as tall as a titan. "I shall soon devise a way, then," he responded with great vigor. "I'll pray it is so," Evelyn said, and gave him a soft little kiss on the cheek, so swiftly and briefly that the guards did not see, and even Gord was uncertain for an instant that it had, in fact, happened. "We approached the sty, so I can no longer be civil, but you are my champion." Stiff and straight, Evelyn entered the palace ahead of Gord. Without another word, she was gone, leaving Gord to return to the celebration. The great hall was only slightly less crowded, trestles removed. The revelers were now engaged in serious drinking, while a motley assortment of entertainers performed in various parts of the long chamber. As he approached the place of honor, Geller sidled up to him. "Your face is as long as a troll's snout, Gord," his companion said. "Better put another expression on it, or the boss might be offended." "Screw him," Gord spat. "Oh-ho, so Lady Evelyn has scored a conquest, has she? Leave her out of this, Geller." Without showing any umbrage, the one-eyed thief took Gord firmly by the arm and halted his progress toward Lord Daly's dais. "For your continued health, listen," he said. "That woman is a treasure of great value, and guarded thus. If a man sees one who is desirous of stealing his wealth, he acts, get my meaning? Now smile, relax, and we'll hoist a few tankards. We're honored guests, you know. Likely to get some companionship from the ambitious ladies there." Gord still looked sour, but he slowly nodded acceptance of the advice. "Thank you, Geller, you're right," he said, regaining his composure as he did so. "Good. I hear that Evelyn is bound for Rookroost in a few days anyway." Wait. Well, here I think that the main thing has to be about Gord's character, that he, although years have passed since his first infatuation and with Violet, Gord really hasn't changed all that much. Here he has just encountered Evelyn for the first time, and he falls in love with her at first sight, and acts, out of character of Gord being, a more experienced and skilled thief and having done all these things, gone all these places, and now he is what back. Side?
Hashemah.
Hello? So, anyway, you know, Gord is, Gord has, you know, not really changed all that much with, you know, the years. He's still very naive and fairly, like, innocent in his ways with women. And, you know, there's not much otherwise about the character or the setting here. We do have what's unexpected, you know, nothing out of the ordinary about Boss Daly guarding Everly, and that the information that since her ransom hasn't been paid, that she is going to be sent to the Plar of Rookroost. And Geller does give him some good advice. And Gord feels close enough to Geller. And Geller, again, though, he does discern how Gord is, you know, acting. And that is always something that, you know, there's always this sense of discernment and disguise. And Gord, of course, wasn't disguising much, but Geller quickly sees that Gord is falling for Lady Everly. And he saves him from acting, you know, acting up right away before he can design a plan. And they're right there in the Lord Mayor's palace at this celebration. And better that Gord doesn't show a sour face to, you know, Boss Daly and cause trouble for him. So Geller steps in, and in a friendly way, Gord seems to have found, you know, somebody who's going to help him here. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 172, chapter 18, paragraph 1. A patch of shadow detached itself from the dark space between two of the buildings. For a brief moment only, it seemed manlike in shape as it moved swiftly and noiselessly across the starlit courtyard. Then it was gone, enveloped in the umbra of the other structures toward which it had drifted. Only a bat had seen the shadow figure, and it cared nothing about it. Sharp-eyed sentries, hired for their ability to see well in darkness, had noticed nothing. The squad of soldiers that passed the area a few seconds later noticed the bat flutter overhead, but saw no more. Gord was clad in black, head covered by a soft felt cap of inky hue, face smeared with lamp soot, hands gloved in ebon leather. Long training and practice enabled him to move without noise, and this silent progress was but a part of his skill. Bad as he was, Gord could become virtually invisible, using small projections, indentations, and shadow to conceal his presence. It had been an easy matter for him to scale the wall around the complex, ease down the other side, and then disappear among the buildings of the fortress-like compound within which the Lord of Stoink dwelled and the city government was administered. However, crossing the broad expanse of Hall Street a few minutes earlier had not been quite so simple, for there were late-night passerbys out strolling, and sentries on the outer wall before him to be contended with. Gord had utilized a passing night soil cart, smelly as it was, to mask his approach, and then he had been forced to remain frozen, prone against the base of the wall, until a group of off-duty guards quit conversing with their fellows atop the wall and went on their way up Safe Avenue. So, we have a little bit here. We've got a couple streets mentioned. We have Gord using his various thief abilities, which, you know, is again, what we can look at that and following the AD&D game is that Gord is obviously, you know, as a thief in the mid-level at the very least at this point, because He's talking about how easy he climbs the walls. He's moving silently. He's hiding in shadows. And this is something where Gygax is taking the AD&D mechanics and the things that you would want to talk to your players about, and yet making them fit in with the dramatized novel here. So he's not saying that what's happening in the AD&D mechanics is something that is out of the ordinary. He's using examples here of how it fits in and how the game is designed to look at what is happening in the fantasy setting, and then to show that you can just meld it over into what is a narrative, so that it doesn't stand out as odd or unreasonable. And so the game mechanics in AD&D really can be shown how you can look at them as a real-world encounter. Now, from here, we get a little bit more about the compound, and that where the Lord of Stoink dwelled. Now, I would guess that's the Lord Mayor's Palace, and there it's also the administration of the city government. He gives its location off of Hall Street and Safe Avenue, that there's a guarded wall, and as you can see, there are special night guards to look out for, to be able to look with infravision or dark sight, and then other guards who are walking in, groups there. There's a little company squad or company of guards. And so we get an idea here of what Stoink's Lord Mayor's Palace is like, and where it, the streets around it. All right, I am going to continue here. It is page 173, paragraph 2. The outer wall of the building he was adjacent to had many projecting stones and cracks. Gord's ascent was much the same as that of a normal person climbing a ladder, although a normal person attempting such a climb as the young thief made would find it next to impossible. Once atop the structure, he continued his oblique progress towards the palace, moving up and down as easily as normal folk went back and forth along the ground. He utilized the concealment of another nearby building, then the south inner wall, to move west to where he could easily see the palace's tall turrets and towers, showing faint black silhouettes against the pale stars. Once Gord had to hang by his fingertips over a ledge as a sentry slowly paced by. Then he was scrambling up at a juncture where the lower wall of the administrative compound met the higher barrier around the palace proper. Now he must be doubly careful, for this area was teeming with guards. The inner bailey of the castle-like palace was only 20 or so feet below him, although the drop to the park on the outer side was over 30. The palace was built on a small hill, and the ground had been terraced long ago to make the place into a stronghold capable of withstanding siege. As a sentry approached, Gord hung at arm's length over the inside of the wall and allowed himself to drop. His fall, roll, and recovery made little more than a whisper and a soft thump. Shadow hid his position, and the patrolling soldier continued on along the top of the wall, unaware that an intruder was within the palace. Break. All right, now, again, we get more details here of the Lord Mayor's Palace and about Gord's, advancing skill. And Gygax emphasizes that point by saying what is easy for Gord would to a normal person be impossible. It's not just that, he's showing the thieves' skills. He wants to show that the character classes, they really represent somebody who is doing something extraordinary. So we have now a little more description of what the Lord Mayor's Palace is like, that it's raised up on an inner hill. It has an inner valley, and the palace itself is more like a castle than, say, just a a place where the rich or an elite might live, as it was built as a stronghold capable of withstanding a siege. We're also told that within this area, the guards are much more numerous. So if you're thinking of detailing Stoic, and within all this, we're told a good deal about Stoic in the last, it's been about 60 or 70 pages here of Gord in Stoic, and there are only about 100 pages of Gord in the City of Greyhawk. So we're really getting quite a bit of, bits here and there of what Stoic is like and what certain areas. And here we're getting detail on, a very important part is the Lord Mayor's Palace. So if you're looking to do a Stoic campaign, which sounds very interesting, with all the possibilities of this, of this bandit kingdom, then here, we have a lot here that can be used for detail. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 173, the last paragraph. Understanding that he may well encounter magical as well as flesh and blood protections, Gord had opted for a bold plan. He ran along the base of the palace wall, for the bailey was deserted and the darkness hid his motion. When the angle of the wall met the great tower at the southwestern end of the palace proper, he sprang upward and stood upon the tiny ledge provided by the arch of the locked portal beneath. Unmoving, hardly breathing, as he plastered his body against the stone, Gord watched the bronze wood gate open and the light spill out into the compound. A half dozen guards came out. The door was banged shut. The group walked away toward their barracks tower, chatting. Their torches might have revealed Gord's presence if any of the soldiers had bothered. Look behind and up. In another minute, Gord was halfway up the tower, moving with speed verging on recklessness. However, he made the ascent without a slip, and about 60 feet up, he moved off onto the steeply pitched roof of the great hall. Another guardsman on the tower's top, 30 feet above, was dozing and witnessed nothing. Pausing near a small turret at the northeastern end of the roof, Gord silently unstrapped his ebon-hued backpack. He pulled a dark cloth out of it and carefully removed all traces of black from his visage. Next, he divested himself of his black outer garments, then got out and put on a surcoat, identifying him as a junior officer of the Constabulary Guard, the body of men-at-arms whose duty it was to protect this very place. He pulled out and strapped on his short sword, and stuffed the black garb into the pack, which he left tucked into a niche where none but the birds and bats would see it. Break. All right, well, now we're getting more of Gord's abilities, but mostly we're getting a good idea now. There's more and more detail being described about the Lord Mayor's Palace. We have a little here about the Constabulary Guard, which Gord had just been made a subaltern as honor for his revelation about a plot by the Hierarchs of the Horn Society and Stoic. So here, we can say we've got an idea about, what's going to be, that the Constabulary Guard their duty is to guard the palace. So they're like this elite force among it, because there is the guard and their watch. And Gord is now a subaltern, which is, where he gets his junior officer garb, his surcoat. Now, it's been commented that these are very James Bond moves. And yes, this is very much how, you can look at some of the actions of what a thief can do. That, all these different things that a thief can be much more than just opening locks and opening traps, looking for traps. And instead, Gygax is showing how all these abilities that are given with a thief, how they can be used in a campaign, so that we have Gord moving in shadows, moving silently, climbing walls. It's a nice example here of if you want to see how you can think about the game and how, even as a player, the ideas for what you could do as a thief character and how you could run, like, even a thief-based campaign. As so far, you know, the Gord book is about a thief. It's from a thief point of view. And all these adventures that are happening are thief adventures. So we get some more things about the size and the makeup of the Lord Mayor's palace. There's the mention of the Bronzewood Gate. There had been an incident where Gord had, where this bandit chief had thrown Gord's knife to him and it sunk it deeply into the wood of a bronzewood tree. And that would just tells you, with the name, that bronzewood must be some, you know, especially solid, magical almost kind of tree. And here they're using it for the gate to the Lord Mayor's palace. Now, we're told a little bit also that the guards have a barracks tower and that the Lord Mayor's palace has several towers and minarets around it. We had been told earlier that the main hall is big enough to hold 300 people. And so that is just one part of this very large, a large kind of structure there that even is a stronghold and a palace. It must be pretty sizable indeed. There is a comment here about running Greyhawk with top secret rules. Yeah, and that is the thing. In the early game with 1E at the back of the DMG, the Dungeon Master's Guide, there were all these ideas about mix and matching the various game systems. And, you were the Gamma World, Top Secret. I don't know if Top Secret was mentioned. But, yes, I mean, all these things they can add in various ways. You can add Boot Hill was mentioned. You can add various things to the campaign by having these crossovers. But, yeah, the rule systems are a question. Anything that inspires you from a campaign, you can work that bit of mechanics or those ideas especially into a different system. Now, it's a little hard with the structure of the fantasy campaigns and some of the other ones, especially Top Secret and Boot Hill, were a much different structure, whereas Gamma World, I always felt, was very AD&D-like. Both Top Secret and Boot Hill, I didn't really feel that they were, they'd be a harder mix to do. But yes, a lot of ideas that you could get from spying, you can add to a fantasy game, and think how good thieves would be and how proper they'd be as spies, because not only do they have the hide and shadows, they also have their listening skills. So, a very, very much that you can run a thief campaign or a spy campaign. And Greyhawk has so much subterfuge that there are so many things happening that are, below the surface that it is always talked about Gord using disguises and being able to see through cons and other disguises. That you could run a game that is very geared toward spying. And that would be a very interesting campaign. All right, I am going to restart right here. It is page 174 and paragraph number 3. Now for the hard part, he thought. Taking a deep breath and thrusting open a small door that gave into a circular room. Rotten Ralashaz, a dice-playing guardsman, exclaimed at Gord's sudden appearance before him. The three other men seated at the rough table looked equally taken aback. "Who's in charge here?" demanded Gord, looking angry and official. One fellow sprang up instantly, the others a bit more slowly, until they realized that an officer was before them. Normally the guards, and most of their commanders, were pretty lax, but this unfamiliar officer before them could mean big trouble. They were supposed to be patrolling the rooftop, watching for possible threats to Boss Daly's security, and now they'd been nailed by an officer, albeit a most junior one, playing at knucklebones, in obvious dereliction of their duty. Not one of them wanted to speculate on the consequences of this, if indeed the man before them had been sent by the boss to check on how really secure the palace was. Break. Yeah, and here Gord, as always, is very quick to react. Back when, he was Flatchet, was the mercenary recruiter for the Horn Society, back when he was recruiting over in Haldrun, which is the mercenary village suburbs just outside the walls of Stoink, Gord immediately came up with a plan and immediately, off the cuff, came up with all these invented things very, very casually. So he's very, a very quick study, and he's very quick, very glib, and able to just come off with an idea and talk convincingly at a moment's notice. And here he runs into guards unexpectedly, playing knucklebones, so they're not where they should be. And he immediately is able to come up with how to take care of the situation. And Gord, and it's like what's been commented on, is that the second edition change to rogue rather than thief was encompassing. And it wasn't a bad change, because Gygax was already fooling around with a variation on what the classic thief was. The classic thief doesn't encompass a lot of the things that ended up being part of Gord. Gord had trained with the René Atloy before this in the book, and he learned a lot of acrobatic tumbling and contortion skills. So Gord, besides picking up all these other things, also became somebody. He had been skilled at disguise and trap opening. There had been a time when he was younger where it was shown how he practiced opening, buying old locks and fixing them, and practice opening and closing them with his old companion Sam back in the university district of the city of Greyhawk. That here we have Gord now being something more than the regular thief. And that, I think, really should be the option, because the thief really, he plays such an important part in the normal dungeons, but that's not all he is. And it really isn't all that you should have him do. And that's, if you're running a campaign, you may want to have your thief character do a variety of things. Maybe not in company with the normal adventuring group. See if you want to do side adventures. And here we have Gord acting alone, but you could have your thief doing things for the Thieves Guild when they're back in town. You could have the thief acting as a spy and doing all these things that you were not going to see a cleric or a magic user or even a fighter be able to do. So there's so many things that are added to a thief that I feel are normally underutilized. So I asked, there were, I am a first edition player, but I take things from anything I find, any setting, any edition that I like, I take out. And so with the changes in second edition, the removal of some classes, it was not a terrible thing for them to try to reconfigure what the thief would be, and maybe make some additions or improvements or other paths that you could have for a thief character. Different ideas that a DM could encompass for, suiting the game toward that kind of character. And here, Gygax is really given such a great examples of what you can do. I'd like to note that here we have mentioned that rotten relish as. And this exclamation, here we have relish as now. There's been a question about how I'd talked about how back in the city of Greyhawk, the various deities were used in just the same way, and that there seemed to be a general knowledge and acceptance back in Greyhawk, which is a more exotic locale, and Stoink again, which is an exotic locale. In a sense, Stoink is very much like areas in the city of Greyhawk. It's a little worse and a little more rough and everything. But here we have the comment that they just throw out about Relish as. Well, the kind of implication is that there's the various deities, rather than having it like an ethnic pantheon, that if things are so involved that they are from the various pantheons and from the various ethnicities and cultures have now become really mixed together, the way that the language has been mixed into there's a common tongue, a common year. And so the Flaness, outside of various areas, it seems like most of the cities are very much used to having an exchange, that they're not like there's a regular examples of the cultures being mixed together here, and not just from the early migrations and the conquering, but that at this point in time you can expect in a campaign to find deities from all over the Flaness and even the Baclunish appearing in various cities. And unless the culture, like the Pale, has a very tight structure to their belief system, then it seems like it's much more cosmopolitan in the various cities. Now, you might not see that in everyone. You're not likely to see it among the Sul Barbarians. You're not likely to see it, say, maybe in Valuna, which is a religious state. You're not likely to see it in the Pale, where Pale is almost gotten down to the single worship of Foltis. But here, just from this little thing where they're commonly using Relish as to curse their luck, that we have an example here in Stoink where the deities are taken much more commonplace, and their names used quite a bit in veins all from previous examples. But Relish as here, the lucky, is a good curse to come out with when you've been unlucky at dice. I'm not familiar with knuckle bones, so I assume it's just something similar to craps. But again, I had an example of a game that seemed like a card game back in Greyhawk that was actually played with ivory plates. And seemed more like Baccarat than poker or anything. And this now has, obviously they have dice, and previously they'd mentioned that they used odd-shaped dice as like a little commentary on our polyhedron dice we use in the game. All right, I am going to restart here. It is page 175. And it is the first paragraph. First man who had stood assumed a sloppy sort of posture of attention and responded meekly. "I'm in charge, sir," he said. "Corporal Mender, sir. I can explain about the game." "Shut up, asshole," Gord commanded. "You listen, I'll talk. Lucky for you dumb shits that Commander Okert it was sent me, not the boss himself." Gord gave them a minute to let that sink in. Commander Okert was in charge of all the guards on night duty this month. He was not a lovable man at best, and he hated night duty. He'd just been posted to it as a way of letting him know that his master was displeased with him for not finding out about the plot of the Hierarchs. Olkert had been chief of spying before. All this was common knowledge among the guards and other employees of the palace, and they also knew that the commander would do anything he could to get back into the good graces of Lord Daly, including exposing the men under his command who were slacking in their duties. Break. Well, here we're introduced to an important NPC. And we have also that the Lord Mayor, or just in general, that Stoink employs, a spy system, that they have a chief of spy. And just as we'd been mentioning before, Gord's actions are what you can do with, with a very James Bond-like spy. But there's also just the regular run of informers and non-leveled characters that you can see as an example. And so here we have a little bit about the adventure, and an adventure idea with a displeased commander fallen out of favor with the boss here. But we also have a bit about his character and about the structure of the Stoink government or administration, where they're employing spies and a spy system. Now, there's a comment here about the modern-sounding vulgarity, and that is a conscious choice, I believe, by Gygax. A lot of fantasy novels have used like a fantasy-sounding or a fantasy-style medieval, and throughout the book, which I at first found a little, threw me off a little bit, was when Gygax would use a terminology that seemed a lot more akin to early 20th century. Some of it you could almost hear like Edward G. Robinson talking in gangster patois. It's just one of the things that I think Gygax decided that rather than try to go for fantasy, he would go for something that he felt his readers would understand more. And so there's a very, very much modern style to the especially the vulgarity, and there's a very modern style to some of the descriptions that they don't fit in exactly in my idea of a fantasy campaign. But if you're running an adventure and you really aren't good with trying to come up, or your players don't feel like they really want to go in for a lot of these and thous, or trying to come up with fantasy medieval style talk or Shakespearean talk, then simply going with conversation that is familiar to them, that you feel they're going to understand what your intention is. So using these modern words and style for the vulgarity, you understand what he's trying to communicate here and what Gord is saying, rather than trying to come up with Gord being displeased in like a fantasy style language. And I think that in the book it jars me a little, but you do get used to that. And once I think you recognize that it is not just being thrown out there without thought. I really think there's some conscious thought here. There's a lot of conscious thought in the design of this book, and a lot of things that you think about earlier on in a reading, later on there's more depth, or there's a reveal where what is happening and not commented on suddenly becomes apparent. All right. I'm going to restart right here. Well, one final comment is how these guards are surprisingly, this is supposed to be the elite guards, the constabulary, and how surprisingly undisciplined they are. And obviously, like it says, that they are not used to their leader for the Night Watch being as vigilant as this, as being discovered and that their other officers aren't as vigilant. So that, again, is something that you can add to the makeup of a STOINK campaign, that that laxity in the guards' vigilance. That definitely could be a major point of discovery. If you're the DEM, letting them discover that that's something, if they need to try to get into the palace, to play upon this business as Gord is doing. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 175, paragraph 4. "But we..." "Shut up," interrupted Gord. "I'm supposed to be here catching you jerks and placing you on report so that the commander can look good. Well, I don't mind telling you that I'm a new boy here. I don't like that sort of crappy deal at all. Kurt will end up looking great. I'll get a nasty reputation, and one day I'll happen to slip and fall off a wall, or have some other accident, and that will be that." Four guards looked at each other and couldn't keep from grinning knowingly at what the subaltern just said. Piss off the troops, and things did have a way of happening. Perhaps not to captains and commanders, but certainly to subalterns. "Wipe those damn smirks off your ugly pusses," Gord raved at them. "Any more of that behavior, and I'll be tempted to take my chances with an accident. Get your asses out of here and on your rounds. Nobody was goofing off in here when I checked. Understand?" "Yes, sir," the guards muttered in unison. Then they were gone in a scuffle and a slam of the roofway door. Break. Again, Gord is very good at play acting. But also, that Gord was just made subaltern, and he's very recently come to STOINK at all. And here, he has already found out that information about Commander Okert. In between when we last saw him pledging to Evelie that he would get her out, he has found out this important information, perhaps with the help of Geller, but also taking the risk that he's letting somebody know, or through some more subtle questioning, he has worked out this important information about who's the commander, what he's like, a very important little thing in the role-playing, where you can have this gathering of information as part of your plans, that you don't always have to just jump from point to point or just hand-wave over something. And this, in effect, is hand-waving in the story, where Gord is coming out with this information, but you really don't understand, you're not told how he came by it. But that is something to think about in a campaign, to let the players play some depth of role-playing, to find out, to gather information, to go to a sage, to use divination, to use the things available, and to get as much information as possible as a player. That's a wonderful thing to do. That is the smartest thing you can do, is to get as much information about a dungeon, a setting, if you're doing a place to rob. The more information you have, the better you should turn out, and the more fun it is. And it adds a little depth to the game, if that is what your players like. It's something to try out for everybody, to give them a taste of, and see if they like that kind of thing, and you avoid the hand-waving. And if they don't, then you know, you do want to make the game enjoyable for the players and the DM. So if you need more information, you add it, and more depth. And if they want it, a little hand-waving over how they gather this, then you hand-wave it. But either way, it is still a great idea for players to think about preparation in the game as the characters. And that is, that is shown right here, how important it was and how useful for Gord to have that information at hand. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 175, and it is the final paragraph. Gord looked around the room, smiling at the ease of his success, then spied a trap door in the floor and pulled it open. In another few minutes, he was walking briskly along the torchlit corridors of the palace's upper floors. looking very busy and official. None of the various persons he encountered took any suspicious notice of him. In fact, the only ones who seemed to notice him at all were a pair of guards at the entrance to Lord Daly's wing. They came to attention smartly as Gord passed. Tossing off a distracted salute in reply, he strode past, and that was that. There was but a single man-at-arms on duty at the entrance to the great tower. Waving his papers vaguely at the guard, Gord went through and up the stairs there without being questioned. The uppermost story was another where Everly was kept as guest of Boss Daly. Another guard was before the door to her chamber. A sergeant who looked professional and mean. Gord took a chance. "Is that door locked?" he demanded. "Yes, sir," the sentry replied, adding the honorific as he measured the junior officer before him, and saw danger in not responding with deference. All right, throughout this book, there has always been this, and I've mentioned it many times before, this theme where this sergeant, because of more experience, he is able to discern parts of Gord's character, that here is an officer of serious demeanor, and that he better add that honorific to his reply. And there's also in this a little thing that we have, some information again about the structure of the Lord Mayor's palace, and a little thing here about Gord waving a paper. Now, that really pushes things. It's not that in the past they didn't use various sealed papers and such, but it does, strike at this business of how Stoink is organized. And that is a pretty organized thing where there you need papers to pass certain guards. In the past, you might have just needed an emblem or a token or a signet, something that would show you're in connection with somebody else. But that is kind of, to me, more, like, say, anywhere from the 18th century onward, you would think more of papers than you'd think of something from a medieval time. So the Greyhawk campaign really doesn't have to hold to, it doesn't have to hold to so much medieval sense. It's not a big anachronism, and as mentioned, it's not a terrible anachronism as commented here, but it also describes that they are technology has books and paper, and that is, there was a comment that the Flatchet, the mercenary by the Herox, he had a ledger book, and that ledger book was blank paper. Now, having a book of bound blank paper is very up there in technology compared to our reality. So, and it implies a lot of different things that you need to have in order to have that level of technology. You have to have the building the paper process, binding processes, and it common enough for it to be used as just as something that mercenary captain had. So it's not an anachronism per se, because this is a fantasy setting. It has a different take on technologies. But the implications are that you would then be able to find in a city people who are bookbinders. You might find bookshops because, the technology is up there. You might find printing presses. So there's all these different ink manufacturers, woodcutters who cut things for, printing. There's all these things that every time you have a bit of technology or some kind of item, then there's all these other things you can add to that to show its support. So if you're, like, say, designing Stoink, or you're designing the city of Greyhawk, and you want to know what you can have for the characters going down the street to see. And that is a big problem with City Adventures, is that just walking down the street, the characters are going to say, well, what do I see? What buildings are here? What shops? And it's very nice to be able to add a whole list of things that are there. And so with the Greyhawk campaign, you can add, well, there's a bookshop. There's a person who's an ink seller. And, you know, here's a place that manufactures ink, manufactures paper. Here, you know, they're gathering the rags. Rags are gathered out up to help make, you know, old rags are used in part of the paper process. It all adds to some background. And in a sense, you say, well, why do I need to pay attention to it? But just because as the DM, you have to flesh out this world. And it really is a big help to notice something like that and then to use it, even if the players never go into the business where they're making ink or making paper. It's there for you to leave open an option for the players and to fill in your city with interesting or just stuff to you know, show that the city isn't just a couple of inns or taverns, or it's filled with all these different things and all this variety, and that really enriches the game. It's a big help for DMs to be able to look at lists of what they can find in a city. And this kind of thing about paper and books, that adds to what they can find. All right, I'm going to restart right here. And then it is page 176, and it is paragraph 5. Then open it, Sergeant. I am here on the order of his authoritative lordship. At midnight, the man was uncertain, but not easily moved. Are you on guard duty? Are posted to tell your superiors the time of night? Gord allowed the anger he truly felt to rise within him. Open the door, or I'll have you on report for insubordination. Yes, sir. May I see the order from his lordship? Gord was prepared. I assume you can read, Sergeant, he said sarcastically, pulling a square of parchment from within his coat and handing it to the guard. The fellow took the document without comment, noted that it was an order for the immediate removal of Lady Everly to Boss Daly's apartments, and signed by Commander Okert. Well, said Gord impatiently, after scarcely giving the guard enough time to absorb the contents of the parchment. This is an order, sir. I'll have the door unlocked in just a moment. Hurry, damn you. If I am questioned as why I'm tardy by Commander Okert, or his lordship, the boss, you'll be the one to hear, Sergeant. Sergeant Melson, sir. Black Melson, he added hastily, as he turned the great lock and pushed on the iron-bound panel to open it. Stay at your post. I'll get the lady and be out as quickly as possible, Gord said with a steely voice that bricked no further word from the sentry. The room beyond was a salon, with a thick rug on the floor and several divans and other furniture. A serving maid slept on one of those couches. Gord walked over to her and woke her none too gently, causing the woman to give a small, startled squeak. Go to your mistress, Lady Everly. Inform her that his authoritative lordship Daly commands her presence in 5 minutes. Tell her she must be dressed for travel, but without any baggage or impediment. The maid got up without a word and turned toward the door of her mistress's chamber. You may inform her that Subaltern Gord is to be her escort, the young thieves added. Subaltern who, sir? Inquired the still drowsy servant. Gord. Tell her Subaltern Gord. Very well, sir. Subaltern Gord, I shall tell the Lady Everly just that. 5 minutes, you say? He bustled into the next room, leaving the question hanging in the thin air. Not more than 10 minutes elapsed before Everly and her maid appeared through the door. Gord had been pacing nervously, but silently, pausing often to listen at the outer portal for any signs of possible trouble. He breathed a sigh of released tension when he heard the two women approaching the salon. Then, at the instant he saw her, Everly's eyes met his, and Gord felt a strange flow of energy within him, a force that made his heart sing and his muscles weak at the same time. He shook it off, forcing his mind to remain on the matters at hand. Romany said, addressing the maid, I have no instructions as to you. Wait here until someone comes to fetch you or tell you otherwise. Go back to sleep. Do your duties. Whatever. If it's all the same to you, Subaltern Gord, I'll just go back to sleep. Gord gave the servant a black look, keeping in character, and then turned to Evely. Your ladyship, are you ready to be escorted to his authoritative lordship? I am Subaltern, Evely answered coldly. Bless you, dear Goldie, for being a friend during this time, she said as she hugged the woman. I shall miss you, I hope. At that the maid laughed briefly, and squeezed Evely in return. Godspeed, she said softly and somberly. Then she turned away and headed back to her couch. Break. Well, here we have Gord, and something I hadn't really considered at first is that Gord is really how he is obviously burning his bridges here in Stoink, and creating quite an enemy, as Boss Daly was either going to get a coin, and he had been asking 10,000 orbs, which in Gygax's gold poor economy, gold is incredibly valuable, and 10,000 golden orbs is a monstrous fortune. Or he was going to trade Evely off to the Plar of Rookroost and an alliance and some coin. So Evely is a major, bit of value right here. She's worth either coin or an alliance in coin. And for Gord to be stealing her, he is making a big enemy. And Daly does not sound like somebody who could be crossed with ease. He is very similar in a way to the earlier character, the beggar master Theobald, even to physical descriptions, as he's supposed to be, very fat, and it's one of the striking things that Gord has, this corrupt and what he describes as a grotesque character. Now, it's commented here that people seem very literate, and the guard here is able to read to some extent. Very literate enough to be able to read a bit of a wordy note here. It was described as ad on parchment, and parchment is a much, I know vellum is scraped from sheepskin. I'm not sure the construction of parchment paper. It's more difficult and expensive process here on Earth, and it's also not, it's not great in bound books and things, but it is something that they use stiff enough to use parchment scrolls. So here Gord has papers, but it seems like maybe there are different kinds of papers. It also shows that he really does have a plan, and he really did the research well to be able to have the necessary things on him to be able to present to the guard the information about Oakheart, to be able to know who's the person on duty and that he's just been assigned. It really does show good preparation here for Gord. We get a little bit more information about the structure of the palace, but really not much. We're given here the one thing that does, I'm not sure about, is there seems to be an implication that perhaps the maid knows that Evely is going to be escaping, as she adds that that she's going to miss Goldie, and then I hope. And that kind of implies to me that, maybe the maid knows what's going on. They have, that is a particularly dangerous position to be left in there with the maid, because if she is not somebody who is trusted by, the boss daily, then it could be, if she's just, might be seen as part of this escape plan. And, it does seem a very risky position to be in. All right, we've hit 7 o'clock, and I am going to end this for today. And we are on page 178. In the future, you can find the archive of these recordings on the Cannon Fire website. It's a link from the homepage. Just so that in the future, I'd like to have put down what pages have been covered in each recording. So I'm trying to make it easier on myself, and have at the end of the recording what page we've ended at. All right, I am going to call up Craig, our handy-dandy recording bot, and I am going to end this for tonight.